Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Ted Santos, and I am your co-host of The Creative Alchemist, and we come to you live every Thursday from 7 until 8, and tonight, well, it's Thursday night, and here we are to talk about business, whether it's your business, the business you work for, the business you'd like to have, or the business you are working on. We bring in guests who have expertise in specific areas. If you've been with us from the beginning, you know we started out talking about transferable skills. We talked about leadership. We talked about the accounting for your company and the new year, the reset, which started last year. And we've discussed many, many other topics, including your health. And tonight will be no different. We will have a guest, as always. Before we introduce our guest, you know I never take this journey alone. I have a co-host. Lori, let them know you're in the house.
Hello, everybody. I'm so excited to be here and looking forward to tonight's guest, who happens to be a dear friend of mine and also multi-talented. And I thought Rob would be a great guest for us. I'm going to let Rob tell you about running not one, not two, but three businesses. So, Rob, introduce yourself, and let's talk about what you do, how you do it, and how you manage to oversee three companies.
I appreciate that, Lori and Ted. Basically, the three operations are commercial, industry, and also at the same time retail business at Seigerman's Furniture. We could start off with there, where we have a vertical operation from my manufacturing of custom furniture, then partnered up with the people at Seigerman's to offer the product directly to designers and retailers. Been doing that now for 40 plus years. I'm getting the hang of it. at the same time, the industrial business has to do with bringing with risk management for people in the manufacturing business of heavy-duty machinery, and the technology business entwines with that, with energy reduction to help them reduce their costs and reduce the risk management of manufacturing here in North America, namely, you know, working with Canadians, Mexico, and USA manufacturers on Tier 1. So that pretty much wraps up my week there.
And if that doesn't keep you busy, what do you do in your spare time?
Yes, exactly. I'm in the backyard, in the pool, or definitely tending to the garden.
Very nice. Very nice. So let's talk about the furniture industry for a minute, if you don't mind, because you manufacture furniture. And when COVID hit, right, which of course everybody's probably sick of hearing it, but we're still in the middle of it. Did you think you were going to be busy, or did you think that you were just going to be at a standstill?
Yeah, well, basically, the first few weeks of it, or when it was really hitting in March and so forth, it was a standstill. And then all of a sudden, one by one, people calling us, oh, we need furniture. And, you know, the draw was that they're not going out to eat anymore. They're not going out on vacation. All of a sudden, they're not leaving their home, and they're just looking at their old furniture. Of course, it's ironic. The same thing happened, you know, back in 2001 with 9/11. People were just home more often, and they're looking at their old furniture and looking at what they're living at and not spending extra money. All of a sudden, it's an extra influx of cash for them. And before you know it, business started taking off, and it's been that way at Seigerman's now since this whole COVID started, since we reopened. It's been, you know, very, very careful. The people there who run the management and the back office were very careful about how to reopen the stores and how to keep it safe to this day. So we made adjustments to make it work.
And you've been busier than ever?
I would say this year is going to be a banner year for us. Started up some new programs. Recently, we just started bringing in some new product that is directly from the Bayshore factory. So supporting the local Long Island manufacturer was really great. Able to get goods where other people are not able to get goods was another big consideration. The delivery time is delayed because of the supply chain, but because of the custom furniture, we're able to manufacture it right here in Bayshore and deliver it in less than 2 months, and you have a custom set. So that, along with the loaner program we have for people for extended delivery time, we've come up with that as well, where you buy something, you don't get delivery for a few months, but within 2 weeks, we deliver a loaner set. So that's been really successful. And then after we take back the furniture, we then donate it, or we sell it off at some type of low discounted price to other people who then can recycle the furniture that's already been used. So we've been very proactive to make sure that we stay within the standards of working within the COVID world, and looking forward to getting out of it sooner or later.
It's so awesome. So you've really taken one concept and, you know, drove it to a whole nother level.
Well, you know, over a 40-year period, you know, you have to adjust, you know, from working in one medium to another, revisiting something that was really popular 30 years ago and still being business, to see it come back into resurgence all of a sudden now. The high-end laminate business, which was one time dormant for a while, has now blossomed into a whole other business that we've taken on, and we've embraced it. We had a grand opening of Speaks, you know, this week to show off that new collection. So we're really excited about that, and we continually make adjustments along the way to make sure that we can accommodate the ongoing, and you have to evolve with the conditions. The game plan in business right now is really you have to look into the future, but not too far away, because you're not really sure what's going to be. So you really have to plan for tomorrow and almost do it the day before. You got to be
absolutely
on your toes.
Absolutely. Now, you said it's a laminate business, but it's not laminate like people think of. It's not like the old countertops. So,
no.
And you have some pretty unique pieces. So if someone wanted to see, you know, some of the pieces, or they were out of, like, in Australia, because we do have listeners in Australia, where would they go to see some of the pieces? Could they go online? Is it on the Siegelman's website?
Absolutely. So basically we have of course, Siegelman's Furniture, they can go on the website, is there, and they'll go to the custom page. It's in Farmingdale. If they want to visit our factory page, it's nylivingfurniture.com. And you'll see up top, it's an exclusive to Siegelman's, which is one of our pride and joy of our factory. It's being associated with the business that's been in business now for over eight decades. The ownership of the business is second to none. It's old school. They're sort of big enough to service everybody, but they're also small enough to care more than any of the big corporate entities. The business that they have and the size of their showrooms are just absolutely huge. So you'll go into Siegelman's, you'll see some of the furniture online there. The NY Living Furniture also has it in categories. And then visit the showroom in Farmingdale. You'll see the samples there. You'll see this is not your old laminate from years ago. Even years ago, I was not known to sell the old shiny white, gray, or beige. And it's been around since the 1940s. It was never my style. I manufacture something that is better than nice. It's really nice. And it's made to fit. We custom make it. So it's really a cut above the others.
It is, and it's beautiful. I mean, there are pieces that have texture, and you do wall units and bedding, and, you know, it's incredible what you do. Laser cut and diagonals and different colors, and, yeah, it is a beautiful product.
Yeah, and basically I'm bringing in laminates from Germany, from Italy, from Belgium, where you might see finishes like this associated with a piece that goes for $8,000 to $10,000. I'm able to do it at a fraction of that cost, because one, we're manufacturing it here. We have the expertise. We have the CNC machines. We have the CAD programs for the complicated jobs. I, of course, draw almost a scale of 3D. So it's all a well-rounded business. And, you know, again, having the support of a larger retailer that's been in business forever makes
right.
it really easy for the consumer to come in and get what they need underneath one house. You know, along with our custom furniture business, we also offer a design business. Oh, yeah, that's what you do. And,
right.
you know, just coincidentally commercial for you. But, you know, the designers in the store all are well-equipped where we do house visits. And we make sure it works out good. But it's all about being there for over the years. And the only way to stay in business is by not losing customers and servicing them right and having repeat business. And you have, and that's what Siegerman's has. It has that magic of the repeat business.
Which is phenomenal. And it's amazing that you've kept it, you know, for, like you said, 40 years. I mean, that's a testament to, you know, your doing business, your perseverance, right?
Yes.
And staying current, right, with the new trends and, you know, making pieces that last.
Yes. I mean, in any business, you have to evolve. You can't stay in, you know, today's technology is, next year is old already. You know, we've always moved when we had to move in my plastics business. When all of a sudden the COVID hit, I found myself involved with manufacturing face masks and servicing, you know, some states like Ohio and New York and New Jersey with PPE products. You know, during that year when nobody was really working, you know, there was no new equipment being bought. Everything was concentrated on doing PPE and making masks. All of a sudden, my automotive customers are not making automotive parts anymore. They're
right.
making face shields. Another one is making masks. So our company has always been lean enough to be able to pivot left and pivot right along with the trends of today, you know, and right now, it's a matter of keeping your old customers happy and being patient. You know, it's a crazy atmosphere out there.
It is crazy. So now that you talked about you kind of led into that other business, let's talk about that other business. Do you want to talk about the technology company or the plastics company?
So basically, you know, they basically run hand in hand. You know, the plastics industry, automotive parts manufacturing are some of the biggest industries that we have here in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
So over the years, I have family who overseas has a machinery business. And about 13 years ago, I went into the machinery business offering a big industrial machinery that you would make, say, car parts with or anything within hand's distance of anybody listening is made out of plastic, comes out of big injection machines. And these machines use up a lot of energy. And they run 24 hours, 7 days a week. My technology, when you hook up to it, it's called Synchro Speed. It is not to bore anybody, but it's a machine that controls the motor, and it reduces the motor speed. It's like having automotive pilot in your car, but it's for industrial machinery. And at the end of the day, the person who runs this machine 7 days a week has electric bill sometimes $500,000 a month. So for them to be able to compete and stay in the market and now be able to reshore and perhaps not send work overseas, they need to reduce the cost of energy. And importantly, that's how our technology does that. And it's all involved with plastics machinery, the guys that make all the parts. So it's from Mexico and it's from Canada. It's been a challenge over the past few years. You know, Mexico just didn't want to speak to anybody in America for a year or two until things settled down after the election. So, again, we had to pivot. And you move left and you move right. And we did more promotion and being patient. And here
right.
we are, you know, after so many years.
Patient.
Yes. Patience and perseverance.
And the technology, you said it's saving energy?
Yeah, basically what we do is we partner up with the local utility. So if a person runs a factory and they are heavy energy consumers, our equipment will reduce their energy usage, and then their utility for most people who own equipment and run heavy-duty machinery, they'll notice that the utility bill is just that a little bit lower than labor. Most people don't take it to heart, but by reducing their electricity cost, it's almost like reducing their labor cost. But they never can reduce somebody's salary, but they could get rid of waste of energy. So our company has that technology, and we partner up with the utilities, who in turn also offer them rebates to actually reduce energy. No different than if you bought an efficient heater for your house, you can then get a rebate for that equipment. Most people don't know that, but if you call up in Long Island, PSE&G, and you tell them you're putting up a new air conditioner in your house and it's energy efficient, or a new heater and it's energy efficient, they'll actually send you a check as an incentive to go make that purchase to reduce energy consumption.
Right. Exactly. Now, could the average consumer purchase your product?
No, it's more for the industrial usage. You know, it's for the person that has the big factory, you know, the Chryslers, the Tier 1 automotives, the Rubbermaids are my customers of that nature. You know, name branded people that make like KitchenAid type of products. So mine on this level, no, but on the commercial use, yes.
So interesting. Do you feel like sharing how you got into that? Because, like, you know, do you wake up one morning and say, oh, I want to do this, and then you just do it that afternoon? Is it, you know, something that
no.
you...
Yeah, no, it sort of was, when this all evolved was being in the machinery business prior to, I was always in the plastics business, say, since maybe 23 years ago. And then back in 2008, 2009, when we had the automotive meltdown and everything went south and people had to be rescued and banks had to be bailed out of all of the automotive manufacturers, as you remember, people stopped buying new machinery because they didn't have the money to buy the new machinery and they weren't even using it. So what happened was when all that happened, I said, you know what? They have all these old machines. What are they going to do with it? They're going to run them for a long time. They do last that way, but they're not efficient. So I partnered up with a company called Synchro Speed in the UK, who have 29 engineers who are all geniuses, and they manufacture my products in a cute little schoolhouse building in the middle of the UK, in, as I say, Coventry. And we, according to each project, is spec'd out, and we transitioned over from selling machinery to now servicing the multitude of thousands of machines that are still in circulation but are running inefficiently and costing the owners a fortune to run them. One machine with my technology might save $50,000 a year, and you might just have 10 or 30 of those machines. So very quickly,
wow.
You know, the hundreds of thousands to millions of dollars are saved by just running more efficient and being more lean. Once any company, just transferring this over to everyday use, and as you say, to people, consumers, but when people reduce their running cost, their ability to be more competitive increases, their competitive edge increases, and they're just going to see more dollars. So in any business, it's all about efficiency. And basically, that's what my technology company is. It's a risk management company. You know, if they want to check out the website, it's called Risk Management Risk, or just go to easier one. It's kwhsaved.com, and you'll see the website with offerings. And people might find it interesting, especially the industrial one.
So kwhsaved.com. All right, Ted, you were going to ask him. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to ask, are people beating down your door to get this from you?
Well, you know, basically, you know, it's funny because I think, as you'll see, probably in any efficiency products, especially energy efficiency, it's not a very sexy conversation. Unless the leadership calls for it, it is not the easiest project to push across somebody's desk. Nobody thinks of spending money to save money. It's sort of funny, you know. You buy a new car, you get better gas mileage. It's not the reason why you buy it. You like the car. So with energy save, the leadership the leadership is important in any instances to take the helm and demand efficiency. Once that happens, then the projects go across, and many of the big factories have 20, 30 facilities. They have multiple machines in each facility. So the demand is there. Knocking down the doors, you know, I think in most industrial businesses right now, especially in the automotive, it's very rough. You find a new car right now, it's almost impossible. So capacity, many factories right now in the USA is down. You're only working at 25 or 50%. So once that happens, they're more worried about staying in business than actually, it sounds funny, than they're reducing costs, even though it's an opportunity they should. But they're very distracted
right,
by it.
Right. Interesting. So I guess if they're not beating down your door to save money, your competition is status quo then.
Well, you know what? It's the funny, as much as you say it's not knocking down the door, it's not that type of business where you work on a high volume of incoming orders, but you work on a higher volume of machinery with a low volume of customers, because in the plastics industry, in the automotive industry, there's only, as much as there's dozens and dozens of subcontractors, the big players are a big, vast majority of all the machinery. So we stay in business
okay.
because, one, we have low overhead. It doesn't take a lot to stay in business if you run it the correct way. And we have ongoing business that is booked, you know, for the time to come forward. So we see our future, and it's just a matter of more and more people coming on board because they're not wanting to offshore their equipment anymore. They don't want to wait for the parts to come from overseas. They're manufacturing the parts themselves. So their option is to manufacture here, bring work home, and try to reduce the cost. And that's where we come in. Then the utility will give them 30 or 20% of the project cost to just reduce the energy, so it becomes an easier pill to swallow.
So I'm listening to a pattern. As Lori is asking you questions, I'm hearing a pattern. Maybe I want to just double check. Because it sounds like COVID might be extremely beneficial to the United States. One question I have is, what do you know about, like, this supply chain disruption? Like, people are having a problem getting access to certain materials. And it's across industries. Is that affecting you? How much do you know about that?
Okay, so, one, it has not affected our custom furniture business whatsoever. It has actually fueled the business. There's a worldwide or industry-wide shortage on basic materials. One of them is foam. As you find, if you went to PC Richards or you go to a mom or papa shop and you try to buy an appliance right now, they're going to tell you perhaps it's a X amount period of time before you see that equipment. Why? Because the foam is used as insulation in the refrigerators and probably the dryers and washing machines as well. And that same foam is used for car seats. There's a delay there. And it's also used in our industry for the upholstered goods. So all those industries are in the same boat and pretty much evens out the field for competition. There's nobody out there saying, I could get it quick. If they do, it's probably a lower-end furniture, and that doesn't affect our customer at all. Our customer wants their color, their size. And they're willing to wait for it.
Okay.
Plus, we also came up with programs to combat that. In the custom furniture business, we have not had that problem at all. The materials are plentiful, and because of the fact that we're able to get an order out in 8 to 10 weeks, it fueled that business because people are rather, some of them just don't want to wait. They'd rather custom make something, get it quicker than wait perhaps a few more months. So really, so it's working. So it's really pushed people to go order because it's actually taking longer.
So it's interesting just listening to the patterns that are emerging, like the dots are connecting. We've become so dependent on a global supply chain, right? So, you know, if you look at a computer, a Dell computer, you get one part from Philippines, another one from Taiwan, something from Mexico, something from the U.S. I mean, that it, you know, it's well orchestrated, and it comes together, except you have so many countries involved to make this one laptop. And now that's been disrupted. And if you disrupt one country, it can negatively impact your ability to build one computer. And I would assume the same happens for furniture. So it sounds like supply chain disruption, COVID, is going to force some manufacturing back to the U.S. I mean, you said you're having some furniture made locally and you can get it faster. So this may create some jobs locally that have been outsourced for years now. What do you think about that?
Yeah, well, I think at the end of the day, that's exactly what's happening. And I think the government is working on that right now with incentives for people to make it better here in the United States and to reshore, which has always been, you know, a buzzword. But now people are, listen, just the fact that you bring a container in from overseas, what it used to be now could be four or five times the cost. The tariffs that have been imposed over the years, it's just pushing people to think about it and manufacture it here and to manufacture it as lean as possible with cost improvements in place. And once you do it here, some people might be also willing to pay a little bit more just because they're able to get it here. And they don't have to wait for such a period of time. So getting a premium on a product at a premium price, but having a premium quality, people will pay for quality. People are not going to stand around, wait 6 months, 7 months for something that is below par. So I think the people that sell quality are in better shape. Because people understand you have to wait a little bit longer to get something that's better. And the people that just want anything, like a piece of furniture just to put in their living room, might just go to somebody who says they have it in stock. But usually that stock item is just, it's very vanilla, so to speak, and it doesn't serve everybody. So, you know, the COVID, it has been a reset on people, and if people are not ignorant to the fact of how dangerous it is and how lucky we are to get this far and how unfortunate we've been in this past, losing so many people, you know, you got to look forward and see, okay, what have I done in the past year that I could do better? And a lot of people have had a lot of time to think about it. And the ones that are still, you know, ones who are still in business are the ones that don't have the extra fat. You have to get rid of the fat if you're going to be manufacturing and staying in business here in the States.
Right. So the other dilemma in having a business in the United States is that a lot of people have been getting paid to stay home. Was that a challenge for you over the past 12 months?
Well, I mean, to be honest with you, for us, no. We once we reopened, people came back to work. I can't think of anybody that really held out, you know, not in our organization. But for sure, you know, we saw it. You know, there was no doubt denying it that people who were making $300 to work but were getting paid to $600 to stay home was a total disaster. You know, it was a total disaster, and it disrupted everybody, you know. And now I think that is beyond us, and now there's a shortage of people. So go figure, where did all these people go that used to work? Are they just older people that have retired? Are they people that, I don't know where they've gone, but, you know, I guess we're building back the workforce, and it seems to be if you want a job right now, you should be able to find one.
Right.
So there are people exiting the workforce also, though.
Oh, yes. There are people, like I said, you know, I don't know the exact figures, but a lot of people have to be retiring. They're at that age where they figure they can, but just to exit for the sake of exiting, I don't want to work anymore, so to speak, and not get any benefit out of it. Maybe they're retiring early and they're taking their Social Security, but I don't know how far that brings the average folk. At the same time, it's a new reality. And I think everybody had a major reset, and they need to look deep on how they're going to stay in business. And if they survive this, then theoretically going forward, they should be able to coast. Assuming it's going to be another year. I mean, I don't see things getting back to normal immediately. I just see people now wearing more masks, at least in Long Island, than I have in the past. You know, I went into a restaurant the other night in the city, not city, but it was in Queens. If you didn't have your card, you were not going to have dinner there. So, you know, people are respecting it. So if that happens, you know, and we don't have any other major outbreaks, you know, perhaps a year from now, this would be behind us. But people will be thinking different about how to do business. And I think one of the controls is going to be having as much control as possible by themselves, and that's what we've done. Even at Seigerman's, now we have our own trucks. We are sending our own trailers to pick up our own furniture. We're not going to wait anymore 12 weeks for a trailer to consolidate 30 pieces to get it together from four different factories. You know, we have the opportunity of, when needed, to get our own goods and to speed up the process. You know, we fought against, you know, the delays. And, you know, you can't just say what used to work works anymore. You need to evolve. And that's how I think I've stayed in business over the years, is by just changing with my customers' needs. When they didn't need the new machine anymore, well, then I'm going to sell you equipment to keep your old machine going. You know, and it really worked out well that way. Yeah.
Lori, you were going to say something.
I was going to ask. So, you know, you can have two people open up a deli right next door to each other. And, you know, both started on the same day, everything. And then all of a sudden, one deli succeeds and then the other one doesn't. So, and you're in the furniture business, right? And over, what we said, 40 years, even though you're only 15.
Right.
You know, and I'm wondering, like, what hurdles you had to overcome, what you learned along the way to keep you successful. And, you know, you had mentioned that, you know, even Seigerman's is such a well-run place that's eight decades, and it still feels like a small family, even though it's a huge store. So what, you know, what can you tell our listeners, or what, you know, how, what you learned and what makes you, you know, successful at it?
You know, I think some basic information, you know, you have to, over the years you go into business, one, you need to do a little market research to see what you're getting yourself into to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't have full control of your overhead, but I mean, you have to have a list from A to Z, exactly what it's going to be, just to be into business, what it costs to put the electric on, what it costs to make the payroll, what it costs to pay the taxes. Mm-hmm. And then the game plan is laid out from there. You're almost reverse engineering it. You know that it's going to cost you $100,000 to stay in business. You now need to figure out a way to make $200,000 to pay for your overhead.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a rigid person and you say, well, I'm going to only do it this way, and then you keep doing it that way. You know, like Einstein says, you know, you cannot do the same thing every day and expect a different result by
right.
doing the same thing every day. You have to be able to be a little flexible. You have to even listen to, you have to listen to your customers. For me, I don't sell. I ask questions. I want to know what you need, and what you need, I'm going to be able to then deliver.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not here to guess what people want. You know, it's very easy. I'm a numbers guy. I see how many people walk through a business, and if you see that you have a lot of traffic, but business is not good, well, that means your product is not good. You have people coming into your store But if you're not selling anybody, there's some fundamental problems that people have to address. And I think at this time, you know, of their career, where things might, they need to dig a little bit deeper. You know, they need to figure out what product they're selling. Is it the right one? Or they need to go to the left or right.
There's
stores or closed stores that once were selling jeans, and the next thing you know, they're selling casual clothes because nobody's going out in jeans anymore, but they're sitting around and they have sweatpants and they need it. It's no different than that, you know. So evolving with the customer is very important.
Mm-hmm. So listening to the customer, caring, right? That's a really big one. Planning, because people don't really think about the expenses.
No, but you have to. It's very simple to realize if you have $10,000 in bills, you need to be able to do X amount of dollars to make that money. And then after you do the money, after you figure that out and you're convinced you have the product and you're maintaining the customers, the worst thing in the world is to lose a customer. You have a customer, or all you want to do is have them repeat business. Without repeat business and without the word of mouth, you're finished. You can't just be that guy in the street every day begging for new business. You want people to come in and ask for you. That's what Seekerman says. You come in the store, been here 20 years ago, been here 30 years ago, bought a couch here. Yeah, my mother shopped here because they did the right thing over the years. So post-service, customer service is 150%. Listen, I have no problem if somebody makes a mistake, you don't service that customer, they're going to tell everybody, all right? Mm-hmm. It's going to cost you more at the end of the day to avoid a problem than to address it. And then once you address it, then they tell everybody you fixed it. So it's a win. You know, everything is a matter of, at the end of the day, you need to keep the service, keep your in check, and then whatever you're selling it for, it's not how much you sell it for. You have to make sure your margins are there. It's not how much you make. It's not how much you make. It's how much you get to keep. And at the end of the day, you know, my father used to say you could have a $10 million business, but if you have $9.5 million of it isn't cost, you're making very little money. You'd be better off having a $3 million business and making the same profit without killing yourself. So you put all these elements together, and that's usually what keeps you in business, and a little bit of luck.
So, let's talk about that finance thing, because when you're starting up, right, you have to know your overhead. How do you figure that, right? Because you have, to do technology like you're doing and servicing that kind of machine, and to have, you know, a factory that does furniture like that, you have to be calculating your overhead. So someone new starting a business, they're going, what's overhead? So we all know, obviously, it's going to be your rent, right? And then what else would you take into consideration?
Basically you have all your basics. You know, you're going to have your rent, you're going to have the payroll, you're going to have taxes.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the unforeseen, when your air conditioning doesn't go, and you have to have a backup plan on how to do any type of financing. So when you're going to a business, to have some type of, if you have limited funds, to have some type of credit line that you don't have to tap, but it's there when you need it to expand, you can. And then when you're just buying your product, you have to make sure that you're not overpaying for everything that you're able to purchase. There's many factories that will give you a discount once you ask for it.
Right.
So, when you're buying something and there's a volume that you anticipate or volume that you hit, you're very right going to the manufacturer and say, can you do better? And perhaps you're in that position that you can do better. Or if not, you might find somebody else who will sell it to you at a better price based on your new volume. But these are all figures that are very easy to put together on a spreadsheet, and you'll see quickly on how much business you have to do based on the margin. You know, whether it's your transportation costs, you have office equipment, down to the electricity bill, down to the water bill. Just for getting your truck on the road, putting the gas into it. These are all bills that add up that you have to account for. And you have to be smart enough to be able to balance these bills. And And there's ways of making extra money on some businesses. You know, I see now some of the churches around the streets are now becoming parking lots during the week when nobody goes to a church during the week and it's open. They're now renting out their parking spots to people to park there next to a local railroad station. So
it's so true.
You know,
oh, my God.
Very interesting.
We just had that.
Yeah, I mean, so thinking out of the box, you know, and partnering up with other people who are related businesses, you know, where you guys could advertise together or have some type of street fair together on different levels,
right.
Are all different ways of being a little bit, you need to just be a little bit louder, but not be in their face. You know, be accessible and be in a good location is always nice, of course. And it comes natural. And sometimes being your own competition is the best thing in the world. So you don't have to worry about everybody else sometimes.
Has the pandemic changed your relationship with your clients in any way?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that?
Has the pandemic changed your relationship with your clients in any way?
You know what? If I talk on the commercial end, yes, it's been on the industrial end, it's been a much more quieter atmosphere. I really didn't want to, almost in the first quarter, second quarter of the year, you felt like you didn't have a right to even speak to anybody to discuss any new projects related to them purchasing anything. You felt like they're just coming back online. You know, you almost feel bad for them that they're running at 25-30%. So you needed to pivot there. But the people on the retail level, they're really, for the most part, they're most cordial. They're sensitive to going into a store and somebody tells them 10 weeks, and then all of a sudden they come to our store and we tell them a little bit more than that, and they question it, and we say, because, well, the other guy was lying. You know, it's very simple. So the trust factor with our customers helped us because the reputation over the years, during a trying atmosphere, people feel confident giving us a deposit and then still waiting several months before they get the furniture. They feel very good about it. There's no hesitancy. But we've been very upfront we've been more than careful. From mask requirements to having hand sanitizer all over the store, and just being sensitive to social distancing at the store. We have plenty of people who come in our facility that perhaps are more at risk, and we're sensitive to that. So you know, we're doing everything that we can to just keep the relationship going and to show them that we actually do care. And a lot of it came, like I mentioned earlier, with that loaner program we have. You know, people don't want to wait. So we went out of our way to buy closeouts to accommodate the people who just have to have furniture tomorrow. So we've stepped up our game, and we rely on the customer, and our customers are quite sophisticated. So we don't really have any issues with that, thank God.
What about from a finance perspective? Has that... is there some sensitivity around that, like customers paying later than normal?
No, ours, as most retail businesses, we get priority from the factory. So talking about paying, if a person has a business and they're having trouble getting goods, well, maybe they need to pay earlier. Maybe they need to prepay. So they become the top of the list. Siegerman's is known for their on-time payments, and we do get priority of most international customers. As far as customers go, you pay for what you get. You pay it on the day of delivery. And some people, they would rather maybe leave a third of a deposit instead of a half because in some instances it takes an extended period of time, and we respect that. But we're well positioned to take a third of a deposit. Versus a half on some orders, and we work with them. So, you know, we're a rather easygoing business, but very professional at the same time. It's run with a soft hand, but you have to. You need to be able to move. You need to be able to spin and be in 14 different directions to keep the business going. So managed to do that for a long time.
And be creative, apparently.
Well, yeah, I think that's in the blood. You know, I think by sharing a bedroom with somebody when you were younger, I was always rearranging the furniture to get away from him. So I figured it sort of led to being in the furniture business. I swear we used to rearrange the room like 47 different ways. So we wouldn't look at each other, but it's always so far you can go in a three-bedroom
right.
apartment.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, no, I mean, listen, it's been a long time in business. I started it when I was in college, working at a showroom, and then later going on to owning, you know, a bunch of stores over the years. And it all comes down to delivering your promises, keeping your overhead in check, and making sure you have repeat customers. And if you do that and you maintain your customers, no matter what business you're in, you're going to have longevity and hopefully prosperity along the way. But the ups and downs just make you stronger. Every time you're down, you should get up stronger than you were before. It's called a learning curve. I tell that to my
Correct.
Kids. There's no making mistakes. It's just something
right.
you learn. Now, when you keep doing the same thing over again, you know, that's called a mistake. But, you know, you have to learn from it, and it makes you better.
Right.
And that is true.
Have we discussed all three of your businesses?
Yeah, I think at this point, basically, you know, we've covered certainly, you know, the retail and the vertical aspect of manufacturing and the advantages of being able to sell your own product. You know, the plastics industry has always been a great machinery part of my life, and the energy reduction portion of that, which is the industrial technology portion of it, as much as they're three separate businesses, it's the same principles. You have to be there yourself. You have to be present to be it. You can't rely on somebody else anymore to do the job. You have to do it yourself, and you just have to do a step above everybody else in order to stay in business.
Right. And each of these are incorporated as separate LLCs, for example, correct?
Yeah, I mean, listen, anybody in business these days, you know, they're all different. You know, Siegerman's is a completely separate entity where I am just a portion of it. You know, the plastics business, of course, and the other related businesses that anybody performs, they would be smart enough to, you know, protect themselves and be able to do all the proper paperwork, you know, just to create their own entities, whether it's a sub corporation, S corporation, however they.
I was asking for a reason that how many employees in each one, like, and is there like crossover? Do any employees work for more than one company?
No. My technology business and the plastics business is myself with a few individual independent reps. The Siegerman's business, you know, I'm not here to say more than proper, but it is a retail business that opens 7 days a week and has plenty of people in the back office as well as on the sales floor. As well as there's a group of stores that are part of this entity as well. So, you know, they have a nice amount of employees, of local people that they have to keep happy, and a bunch of different personalities to deal with, which is always keeps things interesting.
Okay. So, where I'd like to also ask you, have you learned anything about leadership in this pandemic with your employees or even customers? But I'm asking specifically with employees.
You know what? I would say this. You know, customers, we are discussed. You know, employees, I think in general, what I've learned is sometimes speaking your mind comes off as ignorant. Sometimes speaking your mind comes off as you're telling. But I would think most of my position over this past year or so has been promoting health and promoting safety, and I was astonished to find how many people are fighting that, who just feel it's okay to do it their way, and not considering the general public. So, you know, I think leadership on my end, I was able to get through to people and perhaps keep some people from even getting sicker. So it was a challenge, but, you know, again, it's a fine line when you're speaking about health and, you know, and then somebody's personal preference. You know, you got to be very careful there before you basically offend them.
So it sounds like it also there's been, in general, a greater sense of urgency just in the atmosphere. Is that a fair way to state that?
Well, I mean, an urgency, or perhaps it's just a insecurity, perhaps at the same time, of what's going to be next. People just don't know. So I guess, you know, people want to get things done. There's that atmosphere of what's going to be, and I think that creates the uncertainty. And, you know, maybe create some more even urgency to take care of business in different ways. But right now you have to be on your toes if you're going to be in business.
Right. That's kind of what I was getting at, right? So on your toes, like there's a sense of urgency. And perhaps, you know, for this may be the case for some companies. I don't know about yours. But in a lot of companies, when you want to make changes, there's been a challenge because people are, oh, why are we making changes? We've always done things this way. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. And this environment may have incentivized everyone doing things the same old way, because the whole world is aware that there are changes, right? Right? You know, we're part of history. So there's a sense of urgency that sort of encourages people to move quickly to changes as opposed to dragging their feet. So the sense of urgency and being on your toes seems to be always there. So are you finding that your employees are quicker to support changes in this environment?
I think, well, just generally speaking, I would think, well, our employees are on board of what has to get done to stay in business. You know, whether it's a retail business, they're going to only tell you the truth. They're going to tell you 100% of what's going to be, while there's other businesses that don't take that position. You know, so our customers, I think they're sophisticated enough to understand where everybody stands. The employees in the store are understanding that you have to be upfront with the customer, and you have to undersell, and you have to overperform, and you're going to come out ahead. The people that are overselling and underperforming, those are the ones that are going to have to answer to the customers for years to come. That is not the way I've ever been in business. I'd rather be the one that, you know, I underpromise, and then I deliver really strong. And then I deliver what I'm supposed to deliver, and then a little bit extra. So for the ones that are under-delivering, if you're being in trouble, the ones that are over-delivering, the way I believe our business is run, those are the ones that are helping or saying a thank you to the customer for being patient. It's really important to acknowledge the fact that customers don't have to come to you, and perhaps that will keep everybody in business.
Or so we hope, right?
Sounds like increased communication has happened also.
Yeah, but but for many businesses, it's a challenge as well. You know, the average business used to have a 12-week cycle of customers. Now that cycle is 6 months, or 5 months, or 4 months.
Ooh, wow.
So what was 100 customers now is 300 customers calling for all types of different positions in their orders. So companies have to make adjustments. We hired more people. We had one person, now we have three in the back office. You have four over there, now we have six. So you keep evolving, you keep moving forward, you keep trying to take more and more control of your business. And as I mentioned before, The more that you can control yourself, the better outcome you're going to have. There's going to be less chance of error and breakdown. You have nobody to blame except yourself, and then you can adjust. This is just
right.
There's too many people that are taking on business that just can't perform, and that's the problem.
Okay. So we're coming to a close. Any final words of wisdom for the listeners?
You know what? I think at the end of the day, you have to be smart in what you take on to begin with. Once you do take it on, you have to be different than the other. Yeah, you have to do it better. You have to do it quicker. And you have to do it smarter. And you do that within a certain realm of timing where you come in. If you're going to be taking on jobs, you're going to have to quote early. You can't be the last guy in line, and you have to be the first guy to deliver. And again, the most important thing is keeping repeat business. You can't lose your customers. You got to work on those. Stay in communication with them. So
very true. Rob, you want to tell people once again how to reach you?
Yeah, I mean, the best way to reach me would be if you want to get to my the email directly. I think it'd be the easiest for everybody. It'd be Rob, R-O-B, the letter K, furniture, at gmail.com. And then from there, I can direct them towards any of the businesses that we did discuss. And it'd be really appreciated. Lori, I thank you for the opportunity, for inviting me here tonight. And hope if I could help out anybody in the future, my ear is always open.
Yeah, and this was fun and informative, and thank you for being our guest.
Oh,
appreciated.
Thanks again. Okay, guys,
all right,
we'll be in touch with you very soon.
All right, thanks
thank
for joining
you.
Us. Have a great evening.
All right,
take
everyone,
care,
we'll see you next week, Thursday night at 7.
Okay, take care and good night.
Good night.